And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 850. A little Wednesday afternoon action. Special guest to help me talk about some StatCast surprises, some news, some rookies, all kinds of good stuff. Almost like a potpourri of fantasy baseball. You can find him over at RotoWorld now. He has an outstanding Substack. He's on Twitter at TooMuchTuma. Brendan Tuma, how you doing, my friend?
I'm so glad to be here, Bubba. Thanks so much for having me. I can't believe we're already a month into the season.
It's crazy. I was recording with Ryan on Tuesday night, as I tend to do, and we're like, man, like week seven Fab's coming up. There's 27 weeks. We are a quarter of the way almost through this thing. It's flying by as much as we don't want it to. Before we get going on some player discussions for today, let everybody know what you do have going on. You just started a gig over at RotoWorld. You've been running the Substack for a few years now, which is really great stuff. So plug everything going on.
Yeah, I've really ramped up the Substack this year. It's called Too Much Tuma. You know, BrendanTuma.substack.com. You should be able to find it. It's free to subscribe. Sunday nights, I do this mega post. I go through every batting order, every closer situation, every team's upcoming rotation for the week, and give you actionable notes at a time when you're, making your fab decisions and then setting your lineups on Monday and all that. So that's kind of the big thing. And then as we were talking about offline, I like to be, you know, as creative as I can. And so throughout the week, just try to post as often as I can, sort of thing. And yeah, RotoWorld, really cool for me. Just got a little bit up and running there. So more to come, including articles. And yeah, otherwise just Twitter mainly.
Yep. Nope. Looking forward to seeing what they have you doing over there. It's a good group of people over at RotoWorld. I've known a few of them for quite some time. So excited to see you in the mix. Let's talk about some news and notes real quick. One that dropped about maybe an hour ago, give or take. Garrett Crochet now heads to the IL. It's like it just rains and pours this season with IL stints. He goes to the IL with left shoulder inflammation. Looked good in his last start, but it's been, you know, not the dominant Garrett Crochet. I guess it's going to be hard to live up to that dominant nature year after year from what we saw last year. But he's headed to the IL. The Red Sox did say Jake Bennett will likely get called up to make his MLB debut. I don't know a ton about Jake Bennett. Again, this all happened within the last month or hour. But what is your take on, like, now Crochet to the IL? Obviously, you don't want to drop him. But how are you playing with this? It's getting fresh news here.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you remember his spring was like pretty ugly. But, you know, obviously you're not going to do anything about that. It's spring stats. Like we know that. And so, but when something like this happens, especially when he had those couple bad starts prior to the good one, it just makes you think, has this been kind of bugging him for a little bit or whatever? I did like this pitch. I went like deep on every pitcher's pitch arsenal through the first like 2 weeks just to see if anyone was doing anything like majorly different. And he kind of is a different pitch. I think we think of him as this like, you know, overpowering four seam fastball. And he has that obviously. And in 2024, his breakout, that's really what he was. But again, you pull up his like Savant and look at all the pitches he incorporates now. It's kind of like more of like a, you know, he still throws really hard, but it's craftier. And I don't know, that again, just put like a, I made a mental note of that when I saw it. And then when the bad starts happened, I'm just like, so to me, like this whole time for him has been, you know, kind of a wash, and hopefully he gets back healthy as soon as he can. The Red Sox enter the year with like the best starting pitching depth in the majors, and it's being tested pretty quickly.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. In the Discord that we have at Bubba and the Bloom, the IL for the Red Sox, someone posted this from Roster Resource: Cutter Crawford, Garrett Crochet, Sonny Gray, Tanner Houck, Johan Oviedo, Patrick Sandoval. Like, that's a starting rotation for certain baseball teams most seasons. It has dwindled quickly. Peyton Tolley had a interesting start on Tuesday. There's like whispers saying he might need more rest. Like, there's some stuff going on there. It's not great in Boston these days. Obviously, new regime's already in place.
I was gonna say, luckily the organization and manager is in a super stable place and has been for many years now. So
yeah, very, very stable. I can't wait till Trevor Story thing completely blows up, because that is like just boiling, percolating, as they say. All right, let's talk a little closers here. Miami Marlins, Pete Fairbanks. This is kind of a concern heading into the season. There's a reason he said he signed with the Marlins. The good weather, the indoor stadium. He gets the nerve issues in his hand when it's cold, or his fingers, I should say, when it's cold. This happened on Monday night. I live like 3 hours north of LA, and it was chilly here, so it was probably not warm in LA is where I'll go with that. And he had to leave a start with nerve irritation in his hand, his fingers. He heads to the IL in the first opportunity for the Marlins because they've won two in a row against the Dodgers. No big deal. Tyler Phillips got the save in that one, which was interesting because before the game, the manager McCullough said they're going to go by full on committee there, which kind of makes sense. How do you see this playing out? Like, they have no timetable for Fairbanks. Obviously, nerves, you don't know what's going on there, but there will be opportunities because this Marlins team is, you know, we always like to kind of downplay, I guess, the Marlins, or a lot of people do. They're pesky, man. They're going to be in some more ball games than not. So there will be saves available.
Yeah, I think so. The Marlins, Lance Brzdowski talked about this last year when I think last year was the first year of they had a bunch of new staff come in, and he kind of, you know, I think, oh, Marlins, whatever. And he, I remember mentioning, you know, they might be doing some like interesting things there. And then so, okay, pay a little bit more attention. And then so this year, again, when I was doing that Arsenal analysis, Fairbanks added a cutter and his metrics, everything under the hood, were just off the charts. I'm so bummed about this because I do have him in some places, and he had that paternity leave, but he like opened right before leaving for paternity leave. Like, they used him as an opener to get like one inning out of him, and it was terrible. And then again, last night, so he'll go on these streaks where he'll go like 20, 30 innings without giving up a run. And then he'll just completely implode when the hand thing's bugging him. So I'm just, again, so bummed. I think if he had stayed healthy all year, this would have been, you know, a career season for him. And so I'm still pretty excited when he gets back. I don't know everything about this situation, but it's my understanding it's not going to be, you know, something that's going to keep him sidelined all year. In the meantime, yeah, I guess, you know, we're on Tyler Phillips' watch now, and I'll have to see how he compares to some of the other closer committee situations going on.
There's way too many closer committees for my liking these days. It's a nightmare. We'll get to some of those in just a few minutes, but I want to give some more notes here. Giancarlo Stanton finally hits the IL. I say it tongue in cheek because I actually like him for his price tag in fantasy this year. I was like, just give me 100 games. I'll live with it. He got about a month out of him. Goes to the IL. They say with a minor calf strain, it'll be a couple weeks before we see Giancarlo. Jason Dominguez gets the call on Wednesday. They DFA'd Randall Grichuk to call up Elmer Rodriguez, which was a sign that Jason should stick around a little longer when Anthony Volpe returns this week. And a lot of moving parts here. Stick with me, folks. But Giancarlo Stanton to the IL. Thoughts on that, obviously. And then what are your kind of, I guess, expectations on Jason Dominguez? Because they are at least giving him a chance to play the first few days.
I think with Jason, he had the 8 steals before he got called up. And that's huge because ever since they made the minor league base stealing stuff the same as the MLB, you can, you know, maybe trust it like a little bit more. Obviously, the catchers aren't the same. The pitchers, the game planning, all that stuff. But I just like seeing that he was aggressive running because it's just, you know, if the hitting is a little bit slow to start out, it's one, you know, extra avenue he can give you fantasy production with. So for me with Jason, it's kind of like you're either in or you're out at this point. Like, I don't know, like, I think this a lot with like rookie hitters in general, you kind of got to make the decision to just, are you going to like ride this or not? And so with Jason, I think we just got to see him hit at the MLB level. And if you wait until, you know, that's confirmed, like, it's probably going to be too late to do anything about it. And so, yeah, that's kind of where I stand on it, just from like a how to play it sort of thing. It's like, if you've been in on this guy, if you need outfielder, maybe a little bit of speed, then yeah, just, you know, go forward and ride it and give it at least a few weeks, as opposed to, you know, after a few games trying to see what's different from him versus like previous seasons.
Yeah, as long as they're willing to start him, you should probably be willing to as sure, well. Yeah. Because in previous seasons, they have not been willing to start him, which I guess it spoke volumes at that point in time about the situation. Kodai Senga, this one was out of left field, it felt like. Like, what, could you have seen a phantom IL stint coming? Probably. Like, things were not great once again for Kodai Senga, but usually a phantom IL stint's like, oh, he's got a forearm strain or his elbow or they kind of like make something in the pitching realm of things. Kodai Senga lands on the IL with lumbar spine inflammation. Dude can't like stand up. Like, it's a bad deal right now for him. No timetable, obviously, but more importantly to the question I have for you is, Christian Scott's back in our lives. And Christian Scott you know, was once this big time prospect, obviously had an injury, put him, you know, he's rehabbing this year, got the late start to the season, comes up, no control at all in his first start, 5 walks out the gate, but now he's back. He's going to have a few weeks, it looks like, in this rotation, unless something goes real crazy. So are we back interested in Christian Scott right now?
I was for that first start in like a daily lineup league where I could like pick him up and use him right away. And that put a little bit of a bitter taste in my mouth, but I'm long past the point of holding grudges against players. And, you know, there are every day is a new slate to me and every player is usable again. So I am interested in Christian Scott again, just trying to put myself back. When he got called up, I think his first start was pretty good. He was like the guy for Fab in that early season. And since then, you know, we've had McLean, we've had Tong, and it's been a little bit easy to forget about Scott. Even entering this year, you know, there was like some deeper dynasty leagues I was in. He was available in like supplemental drafts and things like that. So like, I am interested because I do like the Mets pitching development, and he was, you know, a top guy. You know, people always say you come back from TJ, the command trails, the velocity, all that sort of stuff. We saw all the walks in his first start of 2026. And as for Senga, I think it's kind of just done. Unfortunately, when you see these, like, he began the year, like the velo was back, and it's just like the first start, the velo was back. And that was like the big storyline. And since then it's just, you know, decrease. I just don't see, you know, maybe he takes some time off, comes back, he can hold the velo for a little bit longer. But to me, that's like a second half thing, if anything.
Yeah, I'm losing hope in Senga. The velo looking good early on, I agree, was made me optimistic finally, because I did like Kodai last year coming into the season, and then it just went off the rails. I was starting to get really concerned again. It's almost like I'm at the point where, okay, prove to me that you can do this for more than a couple starts, because it's been a really rocky road. Christian Scott, very interested in. I wrote him up in my weekly Fab thing for our Patreon, and I said, you know, everyone's paying for Tolle. Everyone's paying for, like, Prelip or all these other studs that got called up. And while Scott's the one that ticked everybody off, and Scott's the one that could be back pretty soon, did not think it'd be, like, 2 days later, obviously. But I'm all, you could get him really cheap in Fab right now and stash him if you wanted to, so we'll see how that plays out for sure. Last bit of news here. This is just minor for most. Max Muncy of the A's goes on the IL with a fractured hand. I'm just more angry because teams still don't know how to use an MRI machine these days. It takes them like 13 days of playing through an injury to realize his hand's messed up. My brain's timeline is what we're seeing with Jackson Churio, who's expected back May 4th. That's kind of where I'm at on him. Any thoughts on this A's third base situation, or are we good here?
I think we're good. Sorry, I was looking at Scott. He did add a cutter and he got rid of his slider, so that's at least like a little bit something different. As for the A's, I'm just triple checking who's been playing third base since he got hurt.
Hernaez.
I'm gonna mess up that pronunciation, but yeah, I think we're okay for now. I know like Geloff was on my mind recently, but he's like an outfielder now and not playing every day anyway, so. Yeah, I think it's just good. Now it's a type of thing, like I've been treating the A's kind of like the Rockies, where, you know, if they're at home and someone's playing every day, even if they're not a great player, you know, they're very usable for fantasy. So if a good situation pops up, kind of like what Muncy was going through, you know, I would be interested.
100%. All right, I'll do a little quick closer rapid fire with you, more of the committees, just to get your thoughts, because I love outsourcing this because it changes every day. So I'm just going to go down real quick here. The A's, we thought it was Joel Cunnell for a while there. Then it's Jack Perkins, but Perkins is doing the multi-inning role. Like, how would you approach the A's bullpen situation?
Yeah, a lot of the, and again, like I give most my analysis for like kind of 12 team home leagues. That's kind of the brain that I use. I know everyone plays all over sort of different things. So it's like you can give analysis and people will be like, that doesn't help. So I try to, my point is that I try to give as much information as I can, and then people can apply that to their own league. But in general, I'm mostly thinking of like, you know, 12s. And so for me, there are closer situations where it's just not even worth it. Like, just don't even, like, the Twins. I don't know if that was going to be one that you were going to ask about, but I'm
full on do not want anything to do with the Twins. I agree with you fully on that, yes.
And so like, there are ones. And so the A's are kind of on the borderline. I kind of think Perkins is worth rostering most places. He does seem to be the guy. Like, Cunnell was used in, like, the fourth the other day. I have no interest in Cunnell's skills. And so, yeah, I too much time already on the A's closer, but it's Perkins if you want to go for it.
It's a mess. I guess, do you still believe in Eniel De Los Santos with Houston, or are you speculating elsewhere?
I personally never did, and the way that I was trying to play that was, okay, they haven't put Abreu on the IL. He's still pitching. You know, maybe this turns around. Hasn't exactly happened, and it's kind of, yeah, at this point I'm kind of just waiting for Hader to come back for that bullpen, unless someone surprises.
Similar to the A's, similar to the Twins, Angels, we just don't care, right?
Yeah, I had a funny
absolute tweet, disaster.
Yeah, about them today. The one thing I will say, and again, I've been on this since I had a little bit of FOMO with Romano because I was way out, and then he looked good for like a week. But the way I've been playing it is for leagues that have IL spots is I have Ben Joyce on IL in a lot of places. Again, someone people kind of forgot about, and at one point, like during draft season, it looked like the Angels might have like four or five options, so that made it easy to like kind of push Joyce away. But yeah, there's not many options. He's kind of always been the closer of the future there, so I don't expect him to get a save in his first appearance back whenever it is, but I think he's the best bet of anyone else.
That is, I'm with you there, because I do playing time tomorrow for Baseball HQ, where I have to try to like dig deep for like potential future changes. And I dig into that bullpen every few weeks and was like, good Lord. Like, if they strike guys out, they also walk guys almost at the same clip. Like, it's just so all over the board there. It's a bad, bad bullpen with not a whole lot in the minor leagues as well. It's a rough state of affairs there. Texas Rangers, do we want to attempt this? Because Junis was added like 3 weeks ago, still doesn't have a save. So that's been a good one.
I know. You're actually, there might be even more.
It's like at least a third of the league is just a complete disaster.
I wrote this big thing before the year because, again, all the analysis I did was pointing me towards, you know, like early closers and stuff. And it's been, you know, kind of hit or miss. But it's just like funny to me that this is happening in a year where, you know, I just thought about the closer position so much and was like, this is one to chase. But some of those early ones have disappointed. And yeah, I know Lats got their most recent save. I know some people like Cole Wynn when they were. When there was like bidding on Junis, the fact that both Garcia and Martin are on the IL, which those were the two guys preseason we were all trying to figure out who it was going to be. But the fact that they're gone makes it a little bit easier if you are starting, you know, Junis or Lats. Yeah, I guess I would put him maybe behind Perkins at this point, but above De Los Santos. So.
Such a mess. This one's actually more of a just philosophy question. So you have the Braves. Raisel Iglesias imaging came back clean, supposed to start throwing. They're expecting Raisel Iglesias to return once his 15-day IL stint is up. Robert Suarez has looked great all season, even as the closer and as a setup man. His skills are just off the chart. If you were, and you obviously are a fantasy player, how would you approach this? Like, how comfortable are you, I guess, with Iglesias getting the job back?
I'm more confident than I was like a month ago. I'm just as I'm talking, looking at, making sure his stuff is, yeah, his stuff is all like the pitching model stuff is all the same as it has been, you know, no like red flags. And then just kind of like the metrics, like you look at like, you know, his like FIP and strikeout minus walk and that stuff is all like really good. And that surprised me. Maybe that's why he got, I know they said he like slept funny, but maybe that's why he got hurt. You know, he was trying to like, you know, I don't even know what it is, like throw hard or whatever. Or maybe he just slept funny, but pretty nice run out for, you know, the Suarez if you had him stashed and rostered and everything. I think they're just going to go back to Iglesias. A few years ago, the Braves did this with Iglesias where they had Kenley Jansen and they traded for Iglesias who was under contract. And it was just the most obvious, okay, they're going to let Jansen walk. Iglesias will be the guy. And so this year, my kind of base case is that Iglesias is the guy for most of the year. They let him walk, and then it's Suarez entering 2027.
Yep, I'm with you. I said that too. Like that was my example in the offseason. They've done this before, and they love having the backup plan is what it feels like. Do we care about the Cubs situation, which is an utter disaster? Like it looked like Thielbar is the guy, then he goes and gets hurt. So that's just been one after the other.
I know you look at like Thielbar's stats and it's like, wow, a win and two saves. It's like it came in this window where I doubt anyone benefited from it. But my God, a win and two saves would have been nice.
It goes a long ways these days.
Yeah, and so I know Phil Maton just came back. Again, this is where like I love like the depth chart type analysis where you can get that like full picture of just like the entire bullpen, who's on the IL, all that stuff. And so like, yeah, it's not just Palencia, it's Theobar's on the IL. You know, this would have been a spot you would have said, you know, back in January, oh, Palencia's on the IL, Hunter Harvey must be doing great, he's on the IL. And so Phil Maton just came back. If I had to make a guess, I guess I'd go with him. The Ben Brown thing just isn't happening. He threw like 40 pitches the other night. So I don't think he's going to be closer at all. So for me, it's kind of Maton right now, but it's again, kind of like the Astros. You just got to wait for the guy to get back.
Yeah. When Palencia is back, he'll take over. Yeah. The Ben Brown thing, he has elite closer stuff, I would say, but to your point, the Cubs don't want to use him as closer, so why do we keep trying to make it happen? They want him to be a multi-inning guy. That's just the reality at this point in time, at least.
I've been as guilty of this as anyone of having that like fantasy brain where you're like yelling at the team, like, call him up and all that sort of stuff. And so it's fantasy players always think that like every organization should run it through what makes most sense for fantasy.
You know, I'm with you. We're all guilty of it. There's no doubt about that. Rockies gonna Rockies. I don't think we want to do that unless you're really interested in Antonio Sensatella for some reason. He's been good, but yeah.
Yeah, I kind of am, which I like if everyone we mentioned so far, like he might actually so pitcher skill wise, he's number one for me, but he didn't get those. They had two save chances on Sunday in that doubleheader against the Mets, and he didn't get either of them.
Yep.
So I don't know if they view him as like a closer, but skills wise, I'm actually in, and in multiple leagues, I've got like him and Dolander now, and it feels so uncomfortable. And I don't even know exactly how I'm going to play it once like the weather warms up in Coors and all that. But yeah, I'm not personally interested in like Vodnik and never have been, but if, cause Sensatella, yeah, he got like that 5-out save. I'm like, oh my God, it's happening. If they do give him, you know, like regular save chances, like, you know, one inning, that sort of stuff, I actually kind of would be interested, but it'll get tough with Coors in the summer. But
yep, no, his skills have improved drastically. Like, who is this guy? But Dodgers, Tanner Scott, I guess, is what's frustrating. It's been like the Vessia, Trina, and Dreyer pitched the ninth down 2-1 on Tuesday. Scott has showed like elite skills. He's been using like all the leverage spots, and he has the latest save, is the way I'll put it. That's who I'm rolling with, but I just know it's going to be a just disaster of trying to predict at times. How would you approach the Dodgers situation?
Yeah, so it's Scott for me. The contract, the fastball, he got the first save. I really wish he closed out that second. Actually, no, I don't even think it was a save situation. I think it was just the loss he took. He gave up a homer to the Cubs. I wish he hadn't done that just because, you know, it's one of those things when the opportunity comes, it kind of matters if you convert him right away. You know what I'm saying? If you convert 10 straight, the manager might give you a couple. If your first two aren't great, then you know, you might be out of luck. And so for me, it's Scott. I'm still catching up on some games from last night, but I think he was used in like the seventh inning. I don't know why that is.
Top of the order with at least two lefties. It was like RC Stowers. It's been all leverage every time. Because trust me, I'm rostering Scott. So every night when I see a different inning, I panic. I look at it, I'm like, it's usually the biggest spot of the night at that point in time.
Oh, yeah. So I guess then, I should have guessed that it was like a lefty thing, but I just like hadn't read all the articles on to why he came in at that point of the game, but that makes sense. And I think that he's still going to get, you know, I don't know what the percent is. I think like people think closers get like 100% of the saves, but if you actually look at it, that like never, even like, yeah, there, you'd be surprised how low even like the highest numbers are. So it's like, I don't even know if I want to put a percent on it. I think he'll get the most saves until Edwin Diaz comes back, but it won't be everyone.
Yeah, the way I look at it with a lot of these bullpens we've discussed, if I can get the guy that gets like 60% of them, I'm happy.
Yeah, exactly.
And especially that's a sad if they're reality. Good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like the thing with me is like again, some of this stuff with fantasy, it's like fun to talk about, but then we have to make a decision, right? And so it's like Scott, I'd be pretty comfortable in a 9-man pitching staff, like having him be one of my weekly pitchers, even if he's not getting every save. I don't know if I can say that though about any other Dodgers pitcher. Now, maybe Vessia, but even in like a 15, like I don't have as much experience with those, but like Vessia in a 15 is, it just doesn't even feel like, you know, great.
No, I'm with you. Like the where I got Scotter in 15s, I'm like, I'm just going to roll with them because the ratio is the strikeouts. Let's just hope he picks up the saves along the way. We already talked Marlins. Just out of curiosity for Milwaukee, are you still holding on to a Trevor Miguel if you were to have rostered a Trevor Miguel?
Yeah, he's again, it's kind of like a Abreu where he's like, he's still pitching, but I've kind of like lost confidence, which is annoying. It started, they were clearly giving McGill the closer treatment. And the way I would describe it is it's kind of just like starting to flip now where I view like entering the season, I thought Uribe was the 1B, and now I just think he's the 1A.
It's messy. McGill's actually been decent since he's got taken out of the role, kind of like how Jeff Hoffman has gotten better, but I don't really know how that's going to play out, period. Like Devin Williams has been a mess. Some people are specking on Luke Weaver. Brad Keller's getting saves. What are you doing with Pittsburgh? Dennis Santana had a rough one on Monday night. He's been the main guy. Soto's been setting up, but Soto's stuff has been much better than Santana's as a whole. Santana's still been fine. Don't get me wrong. But like there was a stretch there where people thought it was going to be the Soto job, and it hasn't been. So where do you sit on kind of Pittsburgh, I guess?
This to me is like the spot, and we can get in trouble, you know, trying to guess what's going to happen at the trade deadline too early. But like if the Pirates are contending, they need a closer. Like this is like the most like let's trade for a closer at the deadline spot that I see right now. And I just have no faith in Dennis Santana. I thought it was happening with the Soto stuff, and Soto skills are, at least early in the year, the first couple of weeks, they were pretty interesting. I haven't looked at them since. And so I know Mace Montgomery is pitching well also. I don't know if they would use him in the ninth. He opened the other day. It's always weird when they use guys as openers. Like I was big on Grant Taylor entering this year, and then he's just like opens every game. I'm like, oh, great, I'll get him in my holds leagues. He doesn't even get holds. So it's like, it's funny how like some guys like that get used. But I don't know. I guess it's Soto's probably a pretty good, you know, in a deeper league. I'm going to, like, until the trade deadline comes, I could see him, like, holding down the job if and when Santana officially loses it.
Yep. I'll take my biases aside here and let you have the floor. Are you even messing with the Giants? Are you, because Ryan Walker did get two saves last week, didn't get the one on Sunday, but the skills are horrible.
Yeah, I'm not into Walker. I know like some of the, you know, Eno and other pitching experts have talked about like he, you know, the crossfire stuff. And it just doesn't look like a closer to me. I know it's like we're past the point where, you know, you're just looking at velocity and, you know, the way a player looks and all that stuff. But there's something about the ninth inning with, you know, you just want to throw gas and miss bats and not walk guys and all that sort of stuff. And so, I really like Keaton Wynn. They're not really giving him, you know, those closer chances like Eric Miller has gotten a couple times. I'm worried about the Giants offense. The Sony's got a lot of like Adames and Chapman, but, the Giants are actually pretty interesting because it's like, there's all these different types of bullpens where it's like there could be a bullpen that has two good options, or it could be a bullpen that has two bad options, or it could just be one that's, you know, wide open. The Giants is wide open. It's begging for someone to, like, establish themselves, and I think that's why there's been so much interest in Keaton Wynn or Caleb Killian or some of those guys.
Yep, welcome to being a Giants fan. It's just been every day. We just got Tuesday night, sixth time we've been shut out this season already. Sixth time. It's unbelievable.
I've in my older, as I get older, I'm not as reactionary with sports. I feel like I've seen a lot. Things don't surprise me as much anymore. I try to always wait for regression to come, blah, blah, blah. I am like worried about the Giants offense and it's partly because of, I don't know enough about the full situation, but it's been bugging me.
It's interesting. That's all I'm going to say because I follow it that closely. I as I get older, I'm with you. I do. I'm just more sarcastic. I make jokes about it more and just kind of like, yeah, it's just another day. But watching this team, it's like they're either like pretty good, like you're like, okay, this team could be good, or it's just like last night where what the heck was even on the field? Like didn't make sense at all.
That was such an obvious like bounce back spot for Lizardo, who you know, really liked going to Zia, the success. But it's like I was so confident that was like the night that he was bouncing back.
Yeah, I forgot the Giants even started the series with him, and someone messaged me and goes, because I have a bunch of Lizardo. I love Lizardo. And I'm like, hey, Lizardo's bouncing back. And I'm like, sweet. And I look, well, of course he's bouncing back. He's facing the Giants. Like, I could have told you that. But all right, last one I got for you. What's your thoughts on Washington Nationals? Clayton Beter did get his scans come back. It's clean. He still wasn't that great. This could be a complete avoid, which I would totally understand. I'm kind of a Gus Varland believer if you want to take a chance, but it seems like it's just a messy situation too.
Yeah, I'm with you there on Garland, or sorry, Garland, Gus Varland. I'm with you that he is the guy if you're going with anyone. The save chances have just been so few and far between. I actually kind of like his skills more than some of the other names we've discussed, but it's just like such a bad team. And so, I think he's, you know, he would definitely be my pick. Unlike the Pirates, I don't expect them, though, like to trade for anyone at the deadline sort of thing. So if someone is going to like take this job, I think it's going to have to come from within.
Yep, totally agree. So that was a nice little wraparound of, it seems like I could probably do this once a week as the closing world. It's like As the World Turns, the old soap opera, for those that are old enough to remember, as the relief pitching world turns each and every week. All right, a little Statcast talk. I kind of mentioned it at the front of the show. I mentioned it recently in the Discord. I've been kind of just peeking at it once or twice a week just to see where things go. On Tuesday night's show, we did the live Bloom boards that Ryan has on the Patreon that kind of showed some risers and fallers and different metrics and, you know, home runs to barrels and all these things. So I started perusing I used Fangraphs, obviously used Baseball Savant. It's all the same stuff. But the Fangraphs leaderboard's easier to, I guess, control in my mind. So I went through there and I looked at the leaderboard and I did a little bit of, I looked at the barrel percentage and then I did a hard hit percentage. I got about six players on each. Just kind of give our thoughts on, some can be super quick, like No Duh. Some can be deeper than that, but just kind of stands out to are really performing well. And I guess, where do we think this goes? So I guess first I'll ask you before we dig in, I know we were talking before the show kind of what you're focusing on content-wise right now, but when you're playing the game and you're analyzing players, how much do you rely on StatCast data? And I guess how much data do you need to start to care about said data?
Yeah, so everyone's different with their fantasy process, obviously. My whole thing the past 5 years has been trying to create this process. You know, obviously Jeff Zimmerman has that term, the process, but like I've tried to, you know, make my own process. I love when the Sixers guy took over and like had that like mindset that just like it worked for me. I want to, you know, build something from when I start my offseason analysis on, you know, whatever it is, October 1st. I want that analysis to flow into like a June waiver wire pickup, if that makes sense. And so that's kind of what I've been trying to create, both for myself as a player, but then also share that with like readers and listeners and all that good stuff. And so for me, I spend most of the time looking at hitting in the off season. It's just too noisy in season for me. Now, obviously you have to look at it in season. It's not that you can't, but in terms of making, you know, big sweeping, you know, decisions, I'm actively trying not to do that. And that's more the case with veteran players. With rookies or young guys who we don't have as much experience with, I'm much more open to changes that we're seeing. But otherwise, to me, like some of the better use of the in-season analysis time is on pitching, where things are changing much more rapidly and at much more actionable pace. So yeah, I don't know, a little bit maybe too philosophical for you in that answer, but that's kind of where I'm looking at it from. But yeah, the stuff still matters in season, obviously.
Yeah. I like to look at it like for this instance, just to kind of like, okay, what's this player doing? Do we believe in it? So on and so forth. But to your point, if it's a young player or an unproven player, I'm very interested to see where things rise and fall and adjustments have been made. And there's a lot of new metrics that we're still trying to figure out. I'm keeping it to the basics today. We're not going to go into bat speeds and all that. That's a still developing topic that there will be use for. Not saying there isn't, but I'm not quite there yet at that this point in time. But barrel-wise, some of the guys I picked out here, I did like a minimum of 30 plate appearances. So it weeds out some of the noise, but still gets you a lot of the really good players. And The player with the third best barrel percentage this year, we're not going to talk James Wood. We're not going to talk Aaron Judge. Mike Trout. This is maybe more just a shout out to thank goodness we might get one more season out of Mike Trout. But Mike Trout has a 25.6% barrel rate and a 51.3% hard hit rate as he entered Wednesday. He's already gone deep on Wednesday, by the way. So he's got that going. That's his 10th home run of the season. Guy's 34 years old. It's primarily been a health thing, Brendan. But I guess what are your thoughts on what we're seeing from Mike Trout? And you're talking about doing like you focus on 12-team home leagues. Well, home leagues have trades. Well, so like a Mike Trout, is this the guy you're looking to deal as soon as possible? Or how we feel about this?
Yeah, so like talking about like all these stats, you know, it's for some people, they're playing season-long fantasy and they're only adding and dropping, right? So it's like Mike Trout, Barrett, there's nothing that can be done. There's nothing actionable for some people. But other people play DFS and other people are going to play in-season best ball and other people play in trades leagues and dynasty leagues. So there's all like that's why this stuff still like matters. I'm just saying like for my I try not to like, yeah, with the veterans, make too many decisions about it. Trout is back. It's not just like the barrel rate. His, you know, the K percent is way down. The walk rate is back up. To me, this kind of looks like this year's Byron Buxton. Maybe too early in the season for me to be saying that, but like someone who's just draft cost was depressed from year. It's not just like, you know, the market, like ADP will let you have one year where you're hurt, but awesome. But after a few, you'll just get pushed down. And that's where I like to strike on the off injured guys.
Nope. I think it's a great point. Like I was out on Trout because I never thought he'd be healthy again, the way things have been going. So now it's just more as a baseball fan, like, yes, we get one more year of what was once the best baseball player we've seen until Shohei showed up, basically.
What does need to be mentioned though is because like it wasn't like, oh, he's been amazing the past 3 years, because he hasn't. And last year, I'm pretty sure the strikeout rate was like 30% or something. Yep. And so entering this year, I get why his cost was down, is because we had health concerns and we were starting to have skill concerns, which that sounds crazy maybe right now, but yeah, no, he just looks absolutely unbelievable. Love to see it. Hope it lasts all year.
Yeah, I remember I was all excited last year. I took my daughter to Disneyland and I'm like, hey, we're not going until Tuesday, Monday night. It's Rangers, Angels, it's DeGrom on the bump. I'm like, I get to go watch DeGrom versus Trout. Probably one of the last times in my life I'll be able to see that. I think Trout like struck out three times. I didn't even look close. I'm like, oh man, it's like a shell of what used to be. So a little different this year, which is great to see. All right, the 10th player on the barrel list at a 20.3% barrel rate, 58% hard hit rate is Jordan Walker, a player that people are doing massive victory lap for to start the season. He's hitting .283, 8 homers and 5 steals, Brendan. But if you dig deeper, I saw a great tweet from Alex Fast. The ground ball rate is coming back in bunches right about now. So what's your thoughts when you look at Jordan Walker? The weird part is he's still super young. Like we feel like he's been around forever. But the skills are looking really, really good to an extent, I guess is the way I'll say it.
Yeah, I hadn't even looked at the ground ball rate yet. I've been focused on the strikeout rate, which is, you know, it's like 32% now. And so that's a concern of mine. I do like that he's running. I like that the Cardinals are just leaving in the cleanup spot every day, right field every day, all that stuff. He's one where, like you were saying, like the young guys, you got to like react quickly. So a few weeks ago when, you know, we were trying to figure out, is this okay? He homered. Oh, now it's another day with a homer. And it's like, I forget his exact progression, but there was like a small window there. Whereas again, in leagues where you can pick guys up, you know, instantaneously, it was, is this real? Should I pick him up? And obviously he has like the really hot stretch. Now it's come back down. I wrote, one of the biggest lessons from last year was Tyler Soderstrom. I loved his April. I went all in. I made a big trade for him. And then he had a down month and I dropped him. And then he had a great rest of the season. And so I'm not like jumping off the ship with Walker or anything. The next few weeks for him are either this is where the pitching adjusts back and now it's his turn, or this is just truly like the beginning of what was like a great few weeks to open the year.
Yep, I agree. I'm hoping it's not. It was a great few weeks, but it's weirdly feeling that way. Maybe just because that's what we've seen in recent years. But let's hope the kid has figured it out. 12th on the list, Michael Harris II. This one really stands out because it's like year after year, there's high hopes of he's going to hit for average, and then, you know, he's going to get 2020, and kind of feels like he lets us down every year, but he still, like I said, still gets to that 2020 range, and you live with it. But this year, Michael Harris is coming out like gangbusters. He's barreling the ball 18.5% of the time with a near 56% hard hit rate. I think it's really important because the best he's done barrel-wise in his career is 10%. Hard hit rate's usually 47, 48, so massive jumps there. The play discipline's still elite, Brendan. So it's always the question, regress to what, I guess, is where it comes down to. But what are your thoughts on what we're seeing from Michael Harris to start the season?
It's so funny how, like, if you don't roster someone, you can go long stretches without realizing what you're doing. So I don't have Harris anywhere. And so when you put him on the list, I just, like, again, Michael Harris, baseball savant. And I went, like, for people who are just listening, I, like, jumped out of my seat, essentially. I had not realized what he was doing. The further I went to look, it became even more exciting because when he first came up, the big thing was the chase rate, and he doesn't make, you know, good swing decisions, but he has the athletic tools. So again, it's still early, you know, month in, all that sort of stuff. But what I'm seeing from him is less chase and more in zone contact. And, you know, the barrel rate's not going to, you know, be at this rate all season long, I don't think, because it's like literally double from last year. But I do think when you think about, you know, what his flaws were in previous years and what we've seen from the swing decision stuff, I do think that that's pretty optimistic. And of everyone on this list, I actually am pretty optimistic about him going forward. Again, kind of the type thing where after a few years, you know, we all kind of just, forget or, you know, accept that this is who someone is, but top prospect. He was super young when he came up. We knew what the flaw was. The flaw is getting better. I think it'll be like the Soderstrom thing I mentioned where there's, you know, a down month or two. But I think when we look at the end of the year, we're going to be like, wow, Harris, you know, when we're all doing our recap pods, we're going to be like, you know, Harris was someone who made a jump in 2026.
Yeah, like if we really dig back, like he had a big September to finish the season last year, like started jumping off the page. Like for those that play DFS, like I was rostering him at 3K left and right because it was a glorious situation. So, yeah, he picked up where he left off, just had a Michael Harris III. So he's a dad now. So it's a whole world with him. But
that makes a lot more sense then.
Yes. But see, there's a reason I just kind of peruse the StatCast page once in a while because there's a lot of names. I'm like, whoa. Like to your point of this is crazy to see. And another one of those is one of my favorite catcher twos this year, but he had a shoulder injury late in draft season, so kind of lowered his price. And that is Dylan Dingler of the Detroit Tigers. Have to have catchers on this show, folks. 17.8% barrel rate, 52% hard hit rate for Dingler. And what to me is really impressive, it's a .253 average with the 5 home runs. The plate discipline is outstanding. I mentioned it when I've talked about him recently, like, any catcher that has a great start to the year, I love it. I'm also realistic the catchers wear down, so you just got to play with that. But when you see a profile like this for a young catcher, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, again, another one that I hadn't, you know, necessarily realized myself. Just in a league last night, I needed a catch. I picked up Sal Perez, and Dingler was available, and I'm, you know, kind of wishing maybe I'd gone with Dingler now looking at it. But I think the most exciting thing is the strikeout rate drop. And one of the things that I like doing with barrel rate is, okay, if the barrel rate's going up, but the strikeout rate is going up and the walk rate's going down, then that's not going to be, you know, that's not going to like last or be helpful. But in Dingler's case, the barrel rate's up, the strikeout rate's down, the walk rate is up. You look a little bit more under the hood with some of like the bat tracking stuff, and he's his blast rate is up. I can talk a little bit more about blast if that's a stat that not everyone looks at too much, but it all looks good. I remember Derek Cardi at times in the past has talked about StatCast metrics can regress just like, you know, surface level stats. So this doesn't mean like this is who he is now or anything. It's only been a month of good StatCast metrics, but from what we can see in the StatCast metrics, it's exactly what you want to see.
100%. And if you want to give like a brief synopsis on that blast, just for those that don't know, go for it. Because it is a metric that isn't used that often, but I think it's quite valuable, actually.
I think the reason is because it's not one of like the first, when you go to someone's like Savant page, you know, you can see X Woba barrel rate, like all that sort of stuff, and it's not there. My understanding about Blast is that it combines bat speed and squared up. And so what you, again, like you were talking about, like bat speed, again, eventually it's going to have this use case. My understanding is that bat speed, you can increase your bat speed. That could lead to a breakout, but higher bat speed could also mean you're swinging and missing more. It could affect other things, all that sort of stuff. So like Blast to me is kind of this like sweet spot where it's like you swung fast and you squared the ball up. And so I like looking at it for that reason, especially here early in the season as we're trying to handle all the noise. You know, when Jordan Walker had those big few weeks, his blast rate, you know, it was doing really well. And that gave me the confidence to be like, wow, like, let's go for this. Just for him, it's come down a little bit. But anyways, yeah.
Yeah, no, it's a very, very interesting one. I might have to even start using more often because I think it is very valuable to see which players are actually producing well in that column. Ty France, this is now where I think people are be like, Ty France? I said, yeah, Ty France. He barely makes the 30 plate appearance threshold, but with those 30 plate appearances plus, he has 37. Ty France is 30th at barrels, 16.2%, 54% hard hit rate. He's a player that in years past, like, he actually does provide a lot of power when he plays enough, but it's been an up and down playing time thing, I guess. Well, actually, the power has deteriorated in recent years, but batting average has been serviceable when he was with Minnesota and Seattle. But right now, I wanted to mention him because he's hitting .317, three homers, one stolen base. It's only been 16 games. I get it. But he's playing a ton of first base for the Padres. So that's why I really wanted to bring up the Ty France conversation, is he might be finding his way into more and more playing time, thus this could be big. So what's your thoughts when you see Ty France jumping out on this board?
Yeah, it's just, you know, kind of a nothing burger for me. But if you're like in a deeper league where playing time is really, you know, important, then that makes total sense. I've been having a lot of fun monitoring Nick Castellanos' sporadic starts for the Padres, including at first base. I don't think he's going to get in the way of Ty France going forward. Yeah, France's metrics are great right now. This is where I have to like take a minute, as much as I love looking at the Savant stuff, and just say, okay, this is 32-year-old, 31-year-old, whatever it is, Ty France. And as like, it's just very different than the Jordan Walker situation, you know, if someone's like breaking out or whatever. It's tough though, because in years past, you know, we've had like the JD Martinez and the Max Muncy's of the world, where they just became like a different player. Jeff McNeil became a different player seemingly overnight. I feel like that hasn't happened as much recently. I could be wrong, but yeah, so that's why I always want to keep the light on for something. But yeah, I just got to take a step back and be like, okay, it's Ty France and it's 16 games, and yeah,
for sure. We don't have to talk about Dalton Rush. I just want to point out he's playing a ton, and he's got a 60% barrel and a 55% hard hit rate, which is absolutely insane for the youngster who might be trying to take Will Smith's job. Let's go to the hard hit side of things, where this really is interesting to me. And again, I'm using the 30 plate appearances because it helps us get a few extra players, at least for fantasy relevance here. And the reason why this stood out to me, it's because it's only been 36 plate appearances. He spent a lot of the time on the IL to start the year, but Kyle Stowers is number one in hard hit rate to start the season. 69.2% hard hit rate for Kyle Stowers. I wanted to bring this up because he's hitting .250. He does not have a home run yet, which is very important. He has one total barrel, 3.8% barrel rate. So he's hitting the ball hard. Best plate discipline he has showcased in his entire small career. I bring a lot of these up to maybe tell people, maybe don't panic, maybe panic, who knows. When you see Kyle Stowers still hitting the ball this hard while not striking out a ton, but not barreling the ball, small sample, what are your thoughts on Kyle Stowers?
I really like Kyle Stowers. He was a really pivotal best ball pick for me, just with the way season went last year. You know, the homers would come in bunches. There would be some swing and miss. That's a little bit tougher to navigate, you know, in a head-to-head league or roto sort of thing. So for me, he was just like the dream best ball pick. Since he's returned, not related to his stats, but the most interesting thing to me is that he did get that start at first base. I would love if, you know, he eventually got eligibility for there as well. He's played 9 of 10 games since he returned, including against one lefty, and the one he sat was just because he had like just gotten back. I really like Kyle Stowers. All the metrics, it's a little too early for me to put too much in them, but I liked him coming into the year, and I'm glad he's back. And yeah, he's hitting, you know, top middle of the order every day. So,
yep. It's interesting to see what he's doing there. If he can get first base, my goodness, that would be awesome. The second hard hit guy, it's gone down a couple percentages over the last few days, but Fernando Tatis Jr., this is crazy. He has a near 67% hard hit rate, a 13.6% barrel rate. Fernando Tatis Jr. has 11 barrels with zero home runs this season. You know, the average home run to barrel is about 64%. So let's just say he's underachieving in that metric. He's hitting 248 on the season, so he's not even hitting for like an elite batting average. It's over a 50% ground ball rate. There's a lot of questions I have with Fernando Tatis Jr. Bright side is, though, hitting the snot out of the ball, and you'll probably hit on it, might gain another position eligibility. So what's your thoughts on Tatis?
I know that all the stuff about second base is it's blowing my mind, but just because it's, you know, we don't see this sort of thing. It happened with Mookie, yeah, like years ago. And but it's funny because like everyone's been like, at least in like my group chat with my home league, the guy who's got Tatis is celebrating and everyone's ribbing on him that he's got zero homers still. So what good is he at second base eligibility? Really? So this is like, this is a different player from before he got popped for the PEDs. Just even in the way he plays, I remember like a year or two ago just noticing that his like spray chart was becoming so much more, you know, up the middle, oppo. Whereas when I pictured Tatis in like 2021, it was a lot more just like pull fly balls. And so I don't know how much of this is like physical versus like approach. And also, so all I can do is like, you know, look at the stats. And so like the hard hit stuff is amazing. He's a great talent. I think if he was never, you know, if we never knew him as a 40 home run hitter, we would still view him as, you know, a real impact player who hits the ball hard and sprays it all over and that stuff. And I kind of think that's what he is now. The zero homers is a little bit weird. But that's not going to last. And I love the barrel per homer analysis that you and Ryan always cover. That's like all you need to know. It's like, it's going to come sort of thing, but I don't know if we'll ever see like, you know, 30 homers from him again, even.
That was kind of my analysis, like in the preseason of like why I couldn't draft him as a first rounder. They started moving to the second rounder. I'm like, if it gets to the back end, we could talk. Because you mentioned it, ever since the shoulder injury, since the steroids, it's been a different approach. He needs to accumulate via like last year at his best year, but he also played a full season for the first time in forever. Like it's a different ball player, like you were saying, and still a very, very good ball player. Not going to knock that at all, but to be this guy, which there was a time when we thought it was like him and Acuna were 40-40 dudes. I don't think we're ever going to see that. Like I guess a lost cause at this point in time. It's just a different approach and the power will come, but you know, you drafted him early, no home runs for the first month of the season. And you got to hope it gets changed and changed just in a hurry. This next one's more of like a streaming thing, but it just stood out to me. Cause like you got Tatis and goes like Wood, O'Neill Cruz, Murakami, Ben Rice, Nick Kirsch. Like, okay. All makes total sense. Andrew Benintendi, eighth hardest hit rate in baseball, 60.7%. He has almost 11% barrel rate. So it's Benny biceps doing his thing. He's only hitting 213. He's got two home runs. It's not flashy by any means. It could be a nothing burger. It's a stream more often than not. But I just wanted to mention the fact that he's eighth on this list, which is pretty crazy to me.
That is pretty crazy. I hadn't heard that name, Benny biceps, in a while, but I miss it because he was like awesome. He was like a third round dynasty startup pick for me in like 2017 or something. But it's a pass for me. It's just like the bat speed is like so low and he's striking out a lot. It's just, you know, we know who Benny is sort of thing.
Yes, definitely. We'll save the next guy actually till we talk about rookies later on, so it all transferred together there. But he's mashing baseballs. Let's hit on Elliot Ramos, 14th hard hit rate of 56%, comes with a 16% barrel rate. We talked earlier about the Giants offense being dreadful. So like when I saw this name, putting the outline together, I was like, no way. He's got three homers. He's hitting 267. The strikeout rate is horrific. That is not what you want to see. But playing actually, I think, much better than even I thought he was playing. And maybe it's, again, because the Giants offense as a whole has just been a clouded black hole. So when you see Elliott Ramos with numbers like this, does this give you, like, I guess, some optimism if you are rostering him?
He was always, you know, a good projection pick this offseason. I think maybe because of, like, the playing time and all that sort of stuff. But, yeah, I'm not super into it. I think it's so funny. It's like, you know, so we have, like, the surface-level stats of fantasy. And then when StatCast came, it's like we can go a little bit more under the hood. Or even before that, you know, you could look at, like, batting average on balls in play, homer to fly ball rate. And it's like, okay, we got StatCast. And now we have, like, bat tracking. And it's like you can keep getting more and more granular. And so what I'm trying to do with all this information at the disposal of our fingertips is have them work in concert together. So it's like, okay, the hard hit rate is up, but if the strikeout rate is up also and the bat speed isn't up and the blasting, then it's like, okay, then I'm just going to kind of like discount, you know, that hard hit. But like for Dingler, when we were talking about, it's like he had all those other things moving in the right direction. And so that's one where I'm more like, yes. And so I almost try, like, in some ways to not just look at, you know, any one stat, but see how they work in the concert with each other. And yeah, everything else for Ramos just, like, isn't enough for me.
Yep. It's a challenge. It's a very big, it's been two different players for his first two seasons. There's a very patient player and a very not so patient player. So curious where that goes. We don't need to talk about Luis Campusano, but I want to throw him on just for listeners. Near 55% hard hit rate, 12% barrel rate. If he gets that time over for mean, I've always been a big Campusano fan. I think there's a lot to like there. But let's transition to some rookies, just kind of see where they're at 1 month into the year. And we'll start with a catcher. We'll go catcher to catcher here. The guy we skipped in the hard hit column, Brendan, is Moises Ballesteros, who is a man amongst boys. He's a boy amongst men, is what I should say right now. He's got the 11th hardest hit rate at 56.4%, barrels the ball 12.7% of the time. They're trying to catch him more, which is great to see. He's hitting 364 with five home runs on the season. Really good plate discipline. Sits first lefties. That's going to happen. But what are we thinking here with Ballesteros? I think he is, like, blown away most expectations so far.
He has. Yeah, I know a lot of prospect people liked him. So he's always been, like, kind of on my radar. You're right about, like, the righties versus lefties. He's played against every single righty this year. You know, I've been doing these batting order notes, so, like, that's something I've been noticing. Like, he basically started the year as, like, he is the DH against right-handers. And then the other day, The Athletic reported that they're going to start ramping up his catching. And so that's a big positive. So, yeah, I think right off the bat, you know, we can say every day versus righties, but probably not playing versus lefties. They did move him up to hitting second, I think last night or the night before. And so that's really encouraging. I think that this is a situation where it's like, I like the player, but the stats have gone too far out in front and it's time to kind of like pull back a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah, no, that's where I'm at. Like, I like him a lot. I still think this is where it's tough. Like, I still think he'll be a very good hitter this year. It's just, it's the old adage, like, if you add him now, you're not getting the early production. There's going to be regression. To what level is the question in play? There's going to be some learning curves that come his direction.
There's a really fun group of, like, young hitters with him and Dingler and Basayo I've been tracking, and even Alvarez with the Mets I've been tracking. So he probably is, like, you know, at the top of all those guys right now. 100%.
I've been very at first when I took the gig, I've been writing for the Black Book for, it feels like 7 years now or something, every year. And at first the gig was, well, if you want to write, we have catchers open, because no one ever wanted to write about catchers. Like, sure, I'll take it. And it was bad, like really bad. But like the last 2 or 3 years, just you could see the youth movement coming. And it like last year it really showed up, and we got even more of it this year. It's a really cool position right now. Like, there's a lot of stuff out there where it's like, yeah, no, I'll do this every year for at least a while. Let's talk Munetaka Murakami. Yeah, a very interesting start to the season, very good start to the season. I say interesting for the fact that, like, when he signed in the offseason, he was a very popular pick. And then Okamoto was getting a lot more love come draft season. Murakami was going down because people were worried about strikeout rates. The spring kind of went a little slow, so on and so forth. Well, Murakami has backed everything up. He's hitting 241 entering Wednesday, 12 home runs. Like, you didn't expect a big average potentially. You expected power, which is like the barrel list and the hard hit. I could have had him on both. Decided to wait for this part of the show for Murakami. the strikeout rate's still rough, which we kind of saw at times in when he's in Japan. But the walk rate's great as well. Like, there's a lot of pros and cons looking at Murakami. He's also only 26 years old. So when you look at this profile, again, a lot of these guys are off to great starts. So there's going to be regression. But like, where do you see Murakami kind of, I guess, settling in?
It's, yeah, such an interesting arc. And it just goes to show, like, how, you know, perception can just, like, you know, affect so much. Because, you know, 3 years ago, he breaks the record or whatever it was in Japan for a Japanese-born player. And everyone's like, oh, he's, you know, just wait till he gets posted. It's going to be the most money you've ever seen. Then, okay, it's free agency. We're starting to see, you know, trade rumors and The Athletic and Fangraphs crowdsourcing all make their predictions. It's like, whoa, like, you know, 150, 180 million. Like, this guy is, like, legit. And then it's like crickets on the market. And we're getting some of the stats about, like, oh, his, you know, contact in the zone and against velocity is terrible and all this sort of stuff. And so then I just kept, like, staring at some projections, which to me are supposed to be, like, the objective, doesn't have any of those biases of, like, the rise and the fall. And he was, like, looking, like, pretty good to me in projections. Granted, some of those leagues that I was looking at were OBP leagues. But he's just a unicorn. He's not, you know, you're not going to, like, you can't really, like, judge him almost. Comparing him to, like, Dylan Dingler and trying to look at the stats, it's just, like, he is, like, in his own world. And I guess the best way I could say it for right now is I don't know if he's going to end up hitting 50 homers or if it's going to be more like 35 or something. But to me, like, the fear entering the year was that, like, you know, the bat was going to be basically taken out of his hand and, like, we were going to be, like, basically, like, I just thought, like, there was a chance that this could go, like, so terribly wrong from the get-go. Like, that's the way people were talking about it. And I've just seen enough to where, okay, he can hit MLB pitching. And that's made me feel good. Now, again, similar to Ballesteros, have we gotten a little bit ahead of ourselves with what to expect rest of the way? Maybe. But I'm in on Murakami.
Yeah, with Ballesteros, like, yeah, the average and everything's crazy. But, like, with Murakami, he's still striking out. The average isn't great. It's like, I guess I can kind of see where this is going. Like, the power is legit as all legit can be. So, like, does he continue this streak? Maybe not, but is he that far off? Probably not either. Like, I believe a lot more what we're seeing with Murakami than Ballesteros at the same time. Both awesome ball players. Kevin McGonigal, if he doesn't get hurt, he's your AL Rookie of the Year. Like, I'll just put that on there right now. This dude is just a specimen at the plate. 25 game on base streak going on right now. Hitting 327, two homers, two steals, 12.6 walk and 12.6% K rates, identical. He was on the home run to barrel list last night because he has two homers and 13 barrels, and he pulls the ball a ton. Like, the ballpark sucks, but this kid is amazing. Brendan, what are your thoughts when you watch what Kevin McGonigal is doing at the big league level?
It's interesting because, like, some of those initial, like, bat track and stuff that I look at, like, the bat speed's not anything special. Like, the blast isn't even anything special. It is just, like, it is crazy. It's crazy plate discipline with an ability to square the ball up. So, like, he, you know, it's, yeah, kind of like that, like, you know, Bregman-y, like, gets, like, the bat on the ball. Like, that's kind of what I think about, like, a squared upright sort of thing. To me, he's selling, you know, 4 or 5 years, maybe not even that long, say 2, 3, 4 years. He adds a little bit of muscle and gets that bat speed up, and you combine that with, like, his swing decisions, and it's just going to be absolute takeoff for him. Such a high floor because of the strikeout and walk rates. And I think, you know, the only negative for 2026 is probably going to be the power. But again, taking a longer term outlook, I think in the years to come, he's going to, one of these years, you know, really jump in the power department.
Yep, I think that will come over time. But speaking of power, Sal Stewart, my goodness. We saw the power and speed in the minor league levels. He got some time with the Reds last year. It was up and down. Still good, but not bad. It's been amazing this year. 290 average, 9 homers, 7 steals. As advertised is the best way I could put it. 29 RBIs so far this season. Yeah, where do we go from here with him? Like, it's just ridiculous.
The most ridiculous thing to me, I was just, like, double checking this story. Yeah, he still hit cleanup in every single game for the Reds this year. And really even for, like, Stewart supporters, I can't imagine having seen that coming. Once they signed, even just like, okay, maybe he would have hit fifth every game, but it's like, no, on opening day, Eugenio was hitting fifth, and they gave Sal Stewart the cleanup role. It's not like he hit his way into it with a hot opening week or anything like that. And yeah, so I just never saw that coming. I didn't see like the speed coming to the degree it has so far. We'll see if that last I checked, it was like 9 homers, 7 steals. I didn't see him mixing in these starts at second base. It's just like every last like supporting factor. It's a great home park. The position eligibility is coming. He homers, he steals bases. He plays every day. He is a stud, and yeah, hats off to anyone who believed and took him.
I liked him this year, not as much as anybody in my draft because I didn't get any shares. He got getting picked before me, and now I'm not happy about that whatsoever. JJ Weatherholt is a guy I liked, and late in draft season, I kept saying, why is he the third one getting picked behind Connor Griffin, Kevin McConnell, and then it was Weatherholt. Now McConnell's playing great. But I said this at the time because we already knew Weatherholt was starting with the Cardinals and likely leading off for the Cardinals. Like, that was established. Still wasn't getting the love. I think he's overproducing what we all expected, to be honest. He's hitting .241. We might have thought a little better batting average there. 6 homers, probably surprising many. 4 stolen bases, you'd expect. Just doing a great job starting the engine for the Cardinals offense each and every day. So we're on JJ Weatherholt. Like I said, the biggest thing, I guess, is the power is maybe higher than we thought, but the average is also lower than we thought.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to track the, you know, those three, Griffin, Weatherholt, McGonagall, all year and into the future as well. There's another guy similar to Stewart where it's like the role. That's like we were talking before the year. Like, to me, all the advanced stats stuff is like table stakes for fantasy right now. And we've almost like lost track of like the role stuff. You know, if we were playing fantasy in 1974, we wouldn't have these stats. And so what would we be doing? We'd probably be tracking lineups and closers and that stuff like religiously. And so I've been, you know, really on top of that this year, trying to be. And yeah, Weatherholt lead off every day from day one. It's just like an amazing role. The power upside is like, I think, a little bit limited. He's a great player. I think this is going to be like a rookie where 2-3 years from now is going to, you know, kind of take that like big leap and add to this skill set when he, you know, matures into his body and all that stuff. But for where he was drafted this year, like, yeah, you could tell from day one he was a stud. It is really funny how both him and McGonagall were going after Griffin and they've transitioned to the majors like a little smoother.
Yep, totally agree with you there. Now we get to a couple players that have had some rougher starts. We hit on the studs for now, but these guys could be studs eventually. And we'll start with Owen Casey of the Miami Marlins, still getting regular at-bats, which is a plus, but 212 average, 2 homers, 1 steal, and more importantly, Brennan, a near 43% strikeout rate. It's been really rough at the plate. I keep waiting for the Marlins to be like, hey, we're going to go a different direction for now, let you get your mind right. They haven't done that yet. But what are your thoughts when you look at what Owen Casey has put up this year?
Early on, it felt very Stowers-y, you know, to be acquired in a trade, corner hitting, lefty outfielder, you know, kind of like a B-minus whatever prospect. I don't know if that's what you want to refer to him as. But, yeah, it's too many strikeouts and not enough walks for him to be, like, usable right now. He did have a nice little start to the season, and he has still played. Yeah, I'm looking at he's played against every single right-hander this season. But no lefties really. And so, yeah, just too many strikeouts, not enough walks. That has to change before he's going to be able to help your fantasy team.
Agreed. Connor Griffin, this is the one everybody wanted to make the team this year. He made it like a week later, got the extension. He should be up for a while. Should be, I say, because like the kid's just turned 20, got a bounce house. That was cool, Paul Skeens. But he's definitely having the growing pains. 226 average, 2 homers, got the 6 steals, which is nice, in 24 games. Striking out over 29% of the time. So I still think he's going to be very good someday. I'm not knocking that whatsoever. But it's been a slow start, which honestly most rookies have slow start. We're getting fortunate with some of these studs out there right now. So what are your thoughts? If you took the chance and you went and paid the fab, or you took the early draft pick and stash for a few weeks of a Connor Griffin, where are you sitting right now with that on your roster?
I'm pretty comfortable just starting him and not even like looking at it sort of thing until at least later in the season. It's probably for his, I'm trying to, you know, evaluate him independently of McGonagall and Weatherholt, as difficult as that is to do, like for the reasons we've been talking about. But, you know, for me, this was like the top prospect in baseball. And yeah, he's on the team now and he's playing. And so, I've seen enough skills that I'm pretty, you know, it's not like a Casey situation where like you literally can't start him right now. So yeah, I'm kind of just keeping him in the lineup all year long and we'll see how it goes. I think by the end of the year, the steals could possibly, you know, rack up in a hurry and that could, you know, maybe vault him up the player rater compared to the other two, but we'll see. Yeah, he's a little bit more, he feels very less, you know, polished than those two guys. As I said, I'm trying not to compare him to them, but yeah, he's a set and forget for me right now.
That's a great point you're making, is I think because too many people are comparing him. I know I'm guilty of it. This is the crew he came up with. This is who we're comparing. It's like the old days. We had like Jeter and A-Rod and all that.
I was just going to say Jeter, like, Nomar, A-Rod.
Yeah, Nomar. Like we compared them for years together at shortstop. That was just the reality of the situation. And we'd probably do the same with these guys for years to come. Like I guarantee you the offseason, you know, recap shows and previews at shortstop. Hey, look, let's see where these guys are. Like, it'll happen. I guarantee it. So it's a great point that we shouldn't compare the three. Like, yeah, you didn't get the other two. You're rostering Connor Griffin. Very good ball player, young ball player, probably going to be just fine by the time the season's over. Is he going to be this elite athlete? You probably shouldn't have thought he would be in year one. That's just also the reality of the situation. But by year three or four of this, you know, three, you know, Weatherholt, McGonagall, Griffin thing, there's a great chance Griffin's much better than all of them. Like, there's just the world's where all this takes place. So that's a great point to be made there. Last one we have here, another guy that's just really off to a rough start, but the Mets keep giving him playing time. He is the primary right fielder, versus right-handed pitching. He sits versus lefties. That's Carson Benji. It's been a rough go. 195 average, two homers, got the six steals, which is nice, but it's like nine runs, six RBIs. It hasn't been great, but to be fair, the Mets offense hasn't been great. So when you look at Carson here, how are we feeling? Because I guess as long as the Mets are playing him, we should at least be rostering him, maybe not starting him, but rostering him.
Yeah, he had those like leadoff games. I think it was like a weekend or two ago. I'm trying to remember why he hit leadoff. I think Soto was like, it's part of why like Soto was hurt or something. But when I saw that, I was, again, without like rostering him everywhere, I was thinking like, oh, he must be doing well. He's leading off now. And yeah, I am a fan longer term. He's got the six steals, which is nice so far. He had, like, I think it was opening day homer, maybe. So, you know, yes. Got himself into, like, the good graces that way. But, yeah, he's just, you know, I think he's, like, it's easy to look at him and be like, oh, he's a rookie and he has upside. So, like, I want that. But it's, I actually don't know if there is much more upside than, like, maybe some other, like, veterans who are having, like, career seasons sort of thing. So, this to me is kind of, like, falls in the radar. It's, you know, dangerous to maybe predict how this is going to go. But, like, you know, ultimately the buzz dies down a little bit and then he kind of quietly starts, you know, shaking off those, you know, first 2 months. Remember like Julio and some other rookies had like, you know, the tough couple months and then they finish you. Churio did that his rookie year. And so it might not be to that degree, but like to me, he's someone who is still getting his feet wet. And ideally, I wouldn't be reliant on him until we see a little bit more.
Yeah, the more they just continue to play him is all I care about. Like, for fantasy, you maybe don't roster him, definitely don't start him, like, whatever you want to do there. But there's going to be a world where it starts to click because the skills are there. Like, some of these guys are still good ball players, but so many prospects get, like, a couple cups of coffee, get sent back to AAA, and just becomes a mess of what's going on.
It's a big deal in New York to, like, get that, you know, consistent playing time. They basically committed to him from the offseason. I mean, we literally saw, like, we started the show talking about Jason and how he didn't play every day when he was first getting going. So, yeah, hopefully it'll work out better for Benji early on.
I agree. So we'll have to see where that goes, but a good young core of players to keep an eye on as the season goes on, again, about a month into the season. But Brendan, we're going to wrap it up there. Thanks for joining me. We covered a lot on this show between news and relievers and Statcast and rookies. It was a nice smorgasbord of a potpourri of fantasy baseball here. Before we leave, remind everybody what you got going on. Is you got a new gig at RotoWorld, you got the Substack and much more.
Yeah, it's Too Much Tuma on Substack, BrennanTuma.substack.com. And then, yeah, recently started at Roto World doing some part-time stuff there, which will be fun. And yeah, thanks so much for having me on. This was, we kind of like ripped through it and it went by fast, and we definitely could have kept talking for longer. I'm sure of that.
Oh, for sure. That's why I looked down. I'm like, we covered a lot on about an hour and 15 minutes. It was really good stuff. So we'll have to jump on and do this again sooner than later. And talk some more fantasy baseball as things keep coming along. But everybody, make sure you check out the Substack. It's awesome. It's really good stuff. It's a lot of articles that you don't see like in the commonplace. I mean that as a compliment. The way that's why
that is like literally my goal. So the fact that you said that, I'm provoked.
No, because every time I'll get the email update, like when your thing comes, or I'll see you tweet it out, and I'm like, it's just the title alone makes you go, huh. And then I start perusing through it. So it's always something that at least opens my eyes to something else, because I do a million shows, it feels like, another thing. So to have something else tweak my brain to make me think away, like, I appreciate the heck out of it. So I hope you guys go check it out, and looking forward to see what Roto World brings him. But make sure you follow him on Twitter at Too Much Tuma. Until next time, everybody, this was Bench with Bubba, episode 850. Catch you next time.